You are listening to The Night War, an audio companion. For more than 65 years, the Night War has taught us what it takes to fight a war, and what war takes from those who fight. Before we get started on this episode, which is of course September 1943, we actually have some special guests here in the studio, whom I'd like to draft in to help answer a few of the questions we've received. As a quick reminder, you can submit questions to us at thenightwar.com, where you'll also find behind-the-scenes information on each episode. So, Liv, do you want to take the first question? Yes, okay. You speak now.
Okay, so the first question is, who exactly are you guys?
That is a good place to start.
Yeah, so we're members of the extended Barnes family. Should we just go around the room?
Sure, I'm Rose Barnes. I'm the granddaughter of Jack and Betty Barnes, Jack who was Bucky's youngest brother.
And he died in the Pacific.
That's right. He was killed in action in Okinawa, and his wife Betty actually had my dad, Andy, and his twin sister Vinnie a few months later, so I'm one of Bucky Barnes's grandnieces.
And you're a writer.
I am. There's a few of us in the family, in fact. I'm a freelance journalist.
And Chris?
I'm Chris.
is there anything more to know than that?
My dad is Jim Barnes, and he,
You can say astronaut.
Right.
Everyone knows he's an astronaut.
Colonel Jim Barnes II. He was the oldest son of my grandma, Rebecca Barnes Proctor. And my older brother, he's Jamie. Well, James Barnes III, actually. And I was in the Army.
You're a Ranger.
Yeah, I was a Ranger. But I'm out of the Army now. Gigi?
I'm Georgiana Murphy. I'm also one of Rebecca's grandchildren. And I'm a med student. What about you, Liv?
I'm Olivia Barnes. I'm a high school sophomore and one of Jack Barnes' great-grandkids.
Oh, like, don't sell yourself short. If it weren't for you, we wouldn't even be doing this thing.
That actually brings us to the second question, which is, why are we doing this? The project, that is.
The Night War, an audio companion.
Right.
Okay, well, I think there are two main reasons, right, Liv?
So the first one was, I had to read it in my modern U.S. history class last fall.
The book? You mean The Night War?
Yeah.
Ah, yes. The inevitable staring and giggling when you get to the dirty parts.
Oh my god, exactly. And we weren't reading an abridged version either. It was so bad.
And the teacher constantly asking you what you think and how you feel about it, being personally connected and such.
Miss Barnes, would you agree that Sergeant Barnes struggled emotionally during the war?
Yes, in fact, I would agree. Because I can read.
Right. Right. So, anyways, as a part of the whole thing, I went to Auntie Becca and asked her if there were, like, artifacts or whatever that I could take to class.
Did she give you that knife? The one with the, thing on it?
Oh my gosh. No, she did not give me the knife with a swastika on it to take to my high school. Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It did not work out.
She did give me some letters, though. Letters home that Bucky wrote, and also a couple from Captain America.
Oh, we call him Steve around these parts.
And a few medals, so I took those in, and it was really cool. I kind of just thought, there are a lot of things that Auntie Becca and Grandpa never gave to, like, the museums or whatever, but that people might still find interesting, especially since...
The Battle of New York.
Yeah, I mean, some of that stuff is private still, but that's what I was thinking.
But I mean, as a pod, whatever this is.
Podcast. Oh my gosh.
Whatever.
Oh, can we just, like, edit him out?
We're against censorship, remember? Keep going.
Fine,
okay. Keep going.
Right, so...
It's fine.
Okay, well, so there was, like, 2 months ago, at the press conference with Steve...
Oh my god, I know what you're talking about. That was terrible.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, somebody just asked him, "Hey Cap, have you read The Night War?"
Oh my gracious, you're making the worst face right now.
No, sorry, but I mean, that's just bullshit. I mean, it's fucking bullshit. Sorry, Rose, I don't know if that's appropriate for that.
We're reading The Night War here, Chris. I think a little bad language is probably okay.
Yeah. Because he woke up, what, like 5 months ago? And they're all in his face asking him about, like... I mean, if it had been me, I would have decked that guy. Sorry, but I would have.
Honestly, it made me kind of sad. And, well, anyways. So he said something like... I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like, I can't...
Yeah. He said, "I just can't read it yet." That's what he said.
Right, and so I thought, hey, what if I, or, you know, Mom, what if we read it to him instead?
Oh, you've done so good with the rose.
I know. So that's why we're doing this. Here's to you, Uncle Steve.
Okay, so that's, we did who we are, we did why we're doing this. Liv, what's the last question?
Right. So, the last question is, what was it like growing up with Bucky Barnes as a great whatever? Okay, not everybody at once. Oh my god. I had to do all the talking on the last one.
Well, I mean, I guess they're asking, you know, how it affected us. Like, having a big old war hero in the family.
So I suppose Steve too, then.
I think so, yeah.
Alright, but honestly, the weirdest thing for me growing up was my birthday.
Oh, that's right. Because you're,
March 12th. Yep, that one. I mean, you know, it's not ever, like... I don't know. It wasn't ever weird, but, like, also at the same time, it was still my birthday, but Granny was always, you know...
Aunt Becca.
Yeah. Mean. She was always a little sad on my birthday, which, like, obviously, I, like, totally understand, but it was still really strange as a kid having that connection back to him.
For the benefit of the audience, Bucky died on March 12th, 1945.
It was one of those things I did, like, every year. Like, oh, Bucky would be 79 this year, or, you know, whatever.
What about you two, Chris? Liv?
Yeah.
Go ahead, sweetie.
I'm only 8 years younger than you, geez.
Yeah, but I babysat you.
Once. You babysat us once.
Still counts. What were you going to say?
Well, there's a lot of people, you know, in the military, in our family.
You don't say.
Yeah, right. And I think that there's some pressure, not from my dad. I mean, he actually tried to stop us both, me and Jamie, from going in. I think he probably had it kind of bad, you know, having the same name. Early on in his career.
He definitely did.
Right, but I also, you know, I bought into that stuff about being a hero and fighting for your country, and I was like, what, like only 12 or 13 when 9/11 happened? And Uncle Sam and everything?
Right,
right. And plus my dad.
Is an astronaut. Uncle Jim is so cool.
That too. So I think having my last name and my dad and in the military, people think, oh hey, that we got a big shot over here and they expect a lot out of you. And so I tried to live up to that. I tried really hard, actually. Yeah.
And you did live up to it, Chris. I mean, you're going to be the best damn tattoo artist that New York City has ever seen.
I don't know about that.
What about you, Georgiana?
Well, I didn't join the army.
Aren't you doing, like, the exact opposite of that?
I don't know if I would call it, like, the exact opposite, but my mom's a doctor, and she and I talked a lot, like, extensively about... my decision to go to med school, but you know, like, kind of the same thing as you, Chris, where your dad didn't want you to do it because he did it. Yeah. Anyway, it was kind
I told
of
her nothing.
Yeah,
either.
It was kind of the same thing. My mom pushed me a lot about it, and I don't know if it's so much about like, hey, we're a military family, guys, as it's about, you know, making a difference somehow. If there's pressure for anything, I think that's it. Do something worthwhile. It could be small or it could be big.
Well, historically, it's been big, so.
Well, yeah, good point. And I think there's a lot of eyes and expectations, but that's outside stuff. On the inside, it's always felt like, or at least to me, live up to the best that you can do.
And do you think that goes back to the Night War, or Bucky, or...
Mm,
I don't know, it wasn't just Bucky, you know? It was your grandfather, too, and it was Steve, and it was Bubby.
Winnie Barnes was one hell of a lady.
I just remember those donuts she used to make, and her, was that bread that she used to make? It was so good.
Naturally. Of course.
Yeah.
And on that note, it's time to get back to the action.
Zognit kein molas du gehst dem letzten Weg. Himmeln bleiene verstellen blaue Tag. Kommen wird doch unser ausgedenkte Schor. Sveta poigt an unser Trott, mir sennen do. Kommen wird doch unser ausgedenkte Schor. Sveta poigt an unser Trott, mir sennen do. Von grünem Palmenland bis Land von weißen Schnee.
September 1st. Home by Christmas. Home by Christmas. I think everyone must be saying it in their sleep like it's a prayer. I guess it is. Joyce and Liscombe came by with a couple of bottles of wine, and so naturally Castellana showed up, and later Harry wandered by, and we had ourselves a decent time. Well, conversation gets to home and what we were all going to do after all of this, and Lipsy says something like, I am going to my cabin on the lake and staying there forever. And so Frank asks him where his cabin is, and he says New York. And I say, bullshit, there's no lakes in New York. Well, I said it without thinking, but you can't blame a guy for forgetting that apparently it keeps going after the Bronx. Harry and Ed get their laughs off me, of course, and Frank asks me, Sarge, you ever even left the goddamn city in New York? Truth is that the first time I ever left home was for training. I told them that, and Ed said it was the same for him, only he's from Pennsylvania. Well, Lipsy is shocked. How can you spend your entire goddamn life in New York? Well, first of all, I'm from Brooklyn. Playing it up a bit so Harry and Ed get a chance to roll their eyes at me. And Harry says, You know, say, Buck, are you really? So they're all laughing. And then Ed goes, But Sarge, if you never left New York, how the hell do you know how to swim? And then it's Frank who's downright cackling, and my turn to be the straight man, saying, Well, Ed, New York is on the fucking ocean. And then we were all close to crying, we were laughing so hard. And maybe a little drunk, too. Anyway, turns out Ed's a machinist and could have gotten a deferment on account of his factory was converting to munitions. Lipsy asks him, Bet you wish you'd have taken it, don't you? And we all expect Ed to have a laugh about it, but he just shrugged. I heard about Pearl Harbor like everybody else. Isn't that the truth? We all thought we were going to be fighting Japs, didn't we? When I go home? Said Harry. I'm going to college. Harry's got big plans. After all, he might have two babies here in a couple of months. And Harry's probably about the smartest fellow in our company, so it doesn't surprise me. So Frank asked me, After your baseball years are over, Sarge, what then? I never even thought about it. Not really. You asked me that question 2 years ago. Before Pearl Harbor, I would have said I'd finish out my year for Uncle Sam and then go back to normal. Find a couple of sweet dames for me and Steve. Get back my old job. But there's really no going back after all of this. Truth is, I do long for my old life, but at the same time, what we are doing must be important, even if it feels like a god-awful slog most of the time. It must be. And I want to do something worth a damn, is all. Maybe me and Steve will get to make comics like we talked about when we were little, and make people laugh. That's worth something. Or invent a fantastic machine, like a car that goes up walls, or boots that make you run as fast as a horse. But mostly, there is nothing I want to do as much as just to go home at all. Anyway, I told a man I didn't know, and then we finished the wine. September 4th. Put on alert to be ready to move at any time. I guess we are well and truly leaving Sicily behind. Mail again today. Curly terribly excited about school. No more awful Dodgers news from Jack. A letter from Teddy. Apparently he has got his ship date, which I found very hard to read indeed. Perhaps we can somehow finish this job before he has to fight. Letter from Pop saying he has been reading all he can in the papers about Sicily, and that it seems like I am doing my job over here and that he could not be less surprised to hear it. Somehow, that is sticking with me. All anyone can ask is that a man does his job, isn't it? I have been thinking a lot of Dad since coming here. When I left the apartment the morning I shipped, I remember looking back at him and Ma. Ma was like I expected, but he was the most heartbroken I've ever seen another person be. When I think of him now, that is what I think of. September 7th. Miller heard a rumor from his pal in Battalion HQ that there will be no bombardment before the landing. All these ships and nothing. It's not as though the fucking Krauts won't be able to look up with a pair of binoculars and see us coming. Don't see why we can't use the goddamn ships. What else are they there for, other than carrying us to climb up to the beachhead? Me and Miller could do that ourselves with a goddamn rowboat. Got a couple of replacements. I don't think one of them is over 20. Kane, Rossi, and Webster. All privates. All baby-faced, but they can swim, thank God. So Rossi's from Queens, and seems to think he's a real brawler. Let me at them is all I got to say about them fucking Krauts, he says at mess this morning, where he and Webster join me, Miller, and Glenn. Well, Harry goes, Rossi, you're $1.15 soaking wet. If you came at my own sister, I wouldn't lift a fucking finger, and instead put $10 on her knocking you out. Well, Rossi gets a bit buffed up, and Miller wasn't wearing his jacket, just a singlet, so this poor bastard's got no idea Miller just got his rocker. He thinks he's just a grunt. I get the sense that he rubbed Harvey Rogers the wrong way too, who is on his mortar team, and ought to have given him the lay of the land. So Rossi doesn't know how to keep his mouth shut. Possibly he never has shut it in all his life. Seeing as he's from Queens, that's what I'm betting on. Sure she would, he says, and then goes with an elbow over to his pal Webster. I saw that sweetheart grip you got. She's got me by what, 180 pounds? Now this is Rossi's first full week in our platoon. You don't go making wisecracks about guys' sisters, especially if they ain't true. Which it was not, on account of Harry's kid sister, 12, and the dame on his gun is his wife, Margaret, who is one classy lady. So, this poor dumb shit of a kid. Harry is cool as ice, too. He doesn't say a word, just grabs his jacket and pulls it on, and gives the kid a second to see the stripes and rocker. His eyes go wide, and Harry's the best straight man there ever was. Hey, Buck, says Harry to me, like this kid hadn't said anything at all. Sure, Harry, what can I do you for? I say. First Sergeant Talley, he asked me earlier to send up a fellow for latrine duty. You remember that? I sure do, Harry, I say. It was double latrine duty, wasn't it? You know, I think you're right. Harry's all thoughtful. And them Krauts, they're real pieces of shit, aren't they, Harry? I ask. And next to me, Glenn starts up with that great cannon of a laugh, and Miller scratches at his chin. Poor Harry can't grow a beard worth a damn either. In that way, maybe Rossi can be forgiven for thinking he was any old grunt. You know, Buck, I hadn't realized that, but I think you're right. Jerry is a piece of shit. And look at our good luck. Getting Private Rossi here in our platoon just at the right time. Seems like you might like to show us how it's done when it comes to pieces of shit, I say. And Glenn's crying laughing now because we are just dragging this out. A real Abbott and Costello act. Or maybe he wants a bit of practice. Hell, he don't need practice, says Harry. Seeing as how he was made for this. Let me at him, he said. He really knows what he's doing with pieces of shit, don't he, Buck? It's what he said. He did say that, says Harry. Hell, we got ourselves a latrine specialist, I think. Cal, what do you think? Glenn can only salute, and Rossi looks just like Jack did when he busted the greengrocer's window playing ball a few years ago, and had to come clean about it to me when I heard about it from Mr. Murphy and cornered him. Private Rossi, says Harry, as second platoon's latrine specialist, please report the first Sergeant Talley on the double. Rossi's still isn't sure if he's kidding. He's shifting from foot to foot, like he's wondering if he should run for it. On the double, he said. I am helpful. Really let him have it, Rossi, says Miller, and now he grins. And that's when the kid knows he's fucked, and scrams. You know, with all these kids to try and keep alive, and Jerry to kill, me and Miller gotta get our laughs when we can. That wasn't half bad, Harry says to me once Rossi packs it in and it's just me and Webster and Glenn. No shit, I say. She's got me by 180 pounds? You know I tried, but she didn't even fit on the goddamn grip, Harry says, and cracks up laughing, finally. No need for a duck boat. All we need your sister. I get one in. That carrier that got sunk in the Pacific? Somebody tell him to just call my ma and the Navy's got a replacement. The USS Miller. Fuck the Navy. Give her some helium and tie her to the beach and we got ourselves a new barrage balloon. Glenn. And then the three of us are really going, and Webster is sitting there, his eyes all wide but silent as a grave. Don't know if he gets to laugh too. Smart kid. He'll do all right. Also forgot to mention Gene Plinsky is back. Bit of a hitch in his get-along, as Powell says, whatever the fuck that means. But he's all right.
September 9th. At least with pencil, the water will not erase it totally. Here we go again. If I can be so lucky as to hang tough with my men and survive this again, and keep them alive, I will thank God for it. Earlier I was thinking of Ma, and I didn't know how to spell it right, so I asked Harry to ask Goldberg in 1st Platoon if he knew it. Goldberg came and found me and said it's Gamzulatova, but spelling doesn't matter on account of its Hebrew or Yiddish, he didn't know which. I remember Ma saying it when things were at their worst, right after I left school, and it looked like Dad was going to lose his job on account of his temper. Frankly, it's hard to account for a god that's got this in his plan, but just thinking of Ma's voice, Gamzulatova, this too is for the good. Well, it helps a little anyhow, because I can at least do my part if nothing else, and I think she can be proud of me for that. September 12th. There was a kid, two men down from me. It was a replacement shipped in maybe 2 days before the landing. Had some Polish name nobody could remember. Can't remember it. His fingers were tapping his rifle, going over his rifle like a rosary. Like it would keep him from getting sick on the boat, even if it wouldn't keep him alive. He just didn't want to get sick on the boat. Sarge, he told me when he saw me looking. Sarge, last thing I want to do is hurl. Water wasn't even real rough, and he said he's got uncles with a fishing boat back home, I don't know where. He wasn't sick because of the water. He was just that fucking scared, like Yates the last time around. I saw him fall. Except he didn't throw up. He got hit in the gut 10 feet up the beachhead. I saw him fall, and somebody ran over him. Didn't see him. Probably better and quicker he drowned than died with that gut wound. And we had to keep going. I can't remember his name. He wasn't in my platoon even for 3 days. And I know he had a ma, maybe a brother or a sister, who remember him, who knew his first name and his last name because they shared it. But I don't think there's anybody who saw him died who even knew his name. When I go, I know Ma and Pop and Steve and Jack and Teddy and Curly will remember me. But not this me, will they? They won't know this me, this person, who had to leave a kid drowning in his own blood on the beach and didn't even know his name. Though maybe I guess I wouldn't want them to. I guess that's why I figure I write all this down. September 15th. So tired I can barely hold a pencil. It is my turn for a smoke, and I'm writing half from light from that, and half just by feel. I keep thinking somehow, if I put myself in this notebook, then if I die, I won't be gone completely. The part of me that cannot breathe or stop screaming for all of this goes in the notebook, and what's left of me, a man that can keep going, is what stays on the outside. Never would have thought in Brooklyn I could be so afraid. Never did a damn worthwhile thing my entire life, and now I'm here. What will they say about me if they say anything at all? Bucky Barnes, devoted son who danced too much and chased skirts too much and was going to spend his whole damn life hauling crates and saving nickels for a nice suit or two. Jesus, Mary, and fucking Joseph. Smoke's done, and now it is Miller's turn. September 17th. I have killed 5 men today. I know I have killed before, but not like this. Always in immediate defense of my men, in service of the objective in combat. But this was a patrol, a scouting mission that Halliwell tapped me for. So I chose Nichols, Delaney, Glenn, and Castellano. And the objective was there, all right. And the orders were to dismantle the Artie battery near Fusillo, which has been causing all of us trouble. I am the best shot in the company. I'm probably the best shot in the fucking battalion, and everybody knows it. And that is why Halliwell chose me. It had to be quick, else it would give away our position. And I said I would do it, because none of them have shot a man in cold blood either. It was the objective, and I know if we were to have been discovered, it would have been a firefight. I know their 105s have stopped our advance, but I found a good position, a couple hundred yards out, and shot them all. We assaulted the guns and killed the rest, and Castellano and Skip destroyed 2 guns, and Delaney the others. There were 15 men in the battery, and I killed 5 of them. September 21st. I have been the war now for 165 days, if you include the day we shipped, and today. I wondered that it might make more sense to count the days before instead. Days since hot beefs at Dinah's, and beers on Steve's ma's roof back in 36. Days since me and Steve took those dames to Coney Island and got sugar all over their faces. I can only remember one of their names. Louise, I remember, was my date. We made time a few weeks later in her parents' place because they were out visiting cousins in Queens. She let me put it in, and it was hot as hell that day in their apartment, but I think we would have crawled inside each other if we could have. Louise was a real laugh. What a ball we had. I don't even know how I can remember any of that now. It seems like maybe I've been here all my life, and God giving me thoughts of Brooklyn is just a new way to make this war the most awful thing I ever knew. Also, we just got the news that Turner's gonna make it. Just lost his leg. Lafayette on the men, too. And Halliwell says he's putting me up for a Bronze Star for the assault a few days ago. Hell, give me another day with Louise instead. Give me an hour with Louise over 100 medals. September 22nd. Back on the line tomorrow. Gamzul Tova. I can believe it when Ma says it, but it is so hard to hear her from here. It rains and rains. Cannot seem to advance an inch without tripwires and traps and mines. It is one thing to be pinned down by mortars, and another to march forward knowing any step might be a mine. It is very hard on the men. Harry, Glenn, Carter, and all the non-coms are doing what we can, but to be honest, it is hard on us too, with several WIA. September 24th. Jerry at it all fucking night. Seems like they ought to have fucking run out of goddamn mortars. My turn with the smoke, and I'm writing this, and my hand can't stop shaking. That's why it's a mess. So bad I can't hardly read what I wrote. We haven't slept in 2 days. Supposed to switch off with reserve company, but word came through First Sergeant Talley that Baker got hit hard, and they're getting pulled back, not us. Fuck. It has been hours and hours of shelling, and I'm hearing it even when the Krauts aren't firing. Me and Miller and Nichols in here together. Skip has gone through his rosary 12 times at least. When a mortar hits a tree, it is the most awful kind of explosion. There is nothing we can do but hope it doesn't hit us. There is no fighting mortars. Just out lucking them. September 27th. 107 pulled back. Able Company, 23 wounded. 7 KIA. Dick Hoffman, Gus Pritchard, and Tom Kelly dead from our platoon. Never been so tired in my life. They had hot chow for us, and me and Miller fell asleep eating, and half the rest of us too. And I woke up thinking we were getting shelled. They say we have 48 before going back, and we haven't been resupplied. But all I want is quiet. Just some quiet and rest. And to be warm with no fucking rain and no mud and no mortars. But most of all, I just want this to be over. At Trowina we could fight back. Here we are just waiting for them to run out of shells, and I cannot stand it. September 30th. I think it is the 30th. It is night, so it may be October already. It all looks the same anyhow. Miller and me rigged up an army blanket tent in our foxhole, and Halliwell said he couldn't see any light, so there we go. Goldberg told me today that it is the start of the Hebrew New Year. He is on 1st Platoon's mortar team, and he got a couple hits in earlier, and he gave me a smoke and said, "Hey, pal, did my pot. Raised some noise and a couple of dead Krauts, too." And I said, "What the fucking shit are you talking about?" Anyhow, I think he thinks I know a whole lot more about being a Yid than I do. But he told me it was the new year, and all of a sudden it made sense. Ma had a friend who worked at the greengrocer's, and she'd come over around this time of year with a jar of honey, and also whatever fruit she could get her hands on, and Ma would candy them. Only time of the year she'd do it, not even Christmas. And according to Goldberg, that's a tradition. And then 10 days of saying Hail Marys or whatever the Jews say, and then it's Yom Kippur, where I guess we find out if we said enough Hail Marys. I remember Nonavini telling me about it when I was real young, and then me telling Steve, and Steve getting all bent out of shape because I couldn't answer all his dumb questions, which is a Steve classic for sure. I think he actually picked a fight with me about it. And here we are, with the new year starting. Somebody's new year, anyhow. And all I got is army chocolate and fucking shells screaming out that the Krauts are doing not even to get us, but just to keep us all awake. And I'm thinking, what the hell did I fucking do that this is the penitence I got? Sitting in a mud pit breaking my teeth on shit chocolate and hoping I don't get blown up? Must have been something real bad. All us poor bastards must have fucked up real bad that this is what we got.